This is Captain Rick reporting. I'll be reading from the Tuesday, March 15th edition of the Decatur Herald in Review. The first article is entitled, Board Should Act Tonight on Taylor Issue. The Decatur School Board appears ready to at least address Superintendent Lisa Taylor's contract at tonight's meeting. A discussion of her contract is on the board agenda, which will hopefully lead to some answers about the district's future. The board, which apparently decided during a closed session not to extend Taylor's contract when it runs out in June 2017, has been in turmoil since that issue became public. Students, parents, teachers, and members of the community have made it clear they want Taylor to stay in her current role. A Wear Yellow campaign in support of Taylor has been present at board meetings and was noticeable among the green at Saturday's St. Patrick's Day parade. In the meantime, there have been some troubling revelations in the last few days. A letter from School Board President Sherry Perkins to Taylor that was part of Taylor's personnel file has become public. The letter directs Taylor to reimburse the district for $177 in charges of a district-backed credit card that were deemed inappropriate. Taylor paid the money to the district in November and considered the matter dropped until the letter surfaced last week. Access to personnel files is restricted to board members, the district's attorney, and the board secretary, Ann Taylor. It's also been revealed that the board had been conducting closed sessions with just the 7 board members, closing the meeting to administrators, the district's attorney, and the board secretary. The Illinois Attorney General advised the Decatur Board to include the district's attorney in those meetings, which is now being done. The meetings were recorded as recorded by law. Those issues, however, are small compared to the potential damage this situation could do to the school district. Taylor was apparently told she had met her performance goals for the year, which begs the question why Perkins, Alita Graham, Barry Butts, and T.J. Jackson apparently want to end her contract. None of these 4 members have said anything about why they don't want to renew Taylor's contract or their plans for the district's future. Hopefully, that will end tonight. The other 3 board members, Dan Oakes, Brian Hodges, and Fred Spanas, have said they support Taylor staying in her position. Is the split between board members and the issues that the majority have with Taylor so serious that they can't be resolved? Although popularity isn't a superintendent's sole job, it's obvious that Taylor has a solid following among teachers, students, parents, and members of the community. It would seem that's something the school board would be interested in maintaining, while at the same time addressing any unresolved issues. Mostly, the board needs to start putting these issues to rest. The community, which has supported the school district both emotionally and financially, deserves an explanation and a plan for the future. The focus of the board, the superintendent, and the district needs to be on improving the educational experience for Decatur students. The solution that we favor would be to extend Taylor's contract and work out whatever issues are causing the current issues. We hope the board takes steps in that direction tonight. The next article is entitled, March Madness, Not So Crazy Fun Brings Families Together. Decatur. Che Bea doesn't need an excuse to have fun with his toddler. Play came naturally to the Decatur man and the 20-month-old Zindine, who shunned toy basketballs for the real thing after watching his dad dribble one low on the ground for his benefit. Because the boy insisted on carrying the ball over his head, Bea simply swooped down from time to time to lift him to a lower than regulation hoop so his son could delight in dunking one. It was hard to tell whose eyes were dancing more, the father's or the child's. Brittany Miller, Bea's girlfriend and Zindine's mother, grinned as she watched. "They are obsessed with each other," she said. The pair was among several father-child duos who turned out last week for a special March Madness evening at Old Orchard's Community Center. Alita Graham, the center's board president, said sometimes dads don't know what to do with their children, so the center wanted to provide an event aimed at them. "Every good thing begins with the family," Graham said. "When families are doing well, our neighborhoods do well, and so does our community." Family advocate Megan Mayrick organized the March Madness last weekend and an Easter egg hunt for this Saturday. Cedric Gomiller Sr. and Thelma Lawson of Decatur brought all five of their children Friday evening because his job as a chef for the gin mill sometimes keeps him away from them. "I thought it would give us something different to do while spending time together," he said. First, the family went to Amy Schrempfer's table and decorated a picture frame with little basketballs, after which Dan Sutton took a photograph of them to put in it. Then Goldmiller and his two sons spent several minutes trying to master some mini basketball games in a rainbow of colors on a nearby table. Zion, 6, would play only with green pressed plastic games. "I'm the master," he exclaimed. "Green is my favorite color." Iris, too, preferred pink after she climbed up on Daddy's lap. Later, Goldmiller shot a few full-size hoops with Cedric Jr., 14, Serenity, 12, and Aisha, 10, while their mother watched the younger children and enjoyed a hot dog. Other games included a beanbag toss and a race requiring contestants to step up on a pair of flat cardboard basketballs they could move across the floor. The next article is entitled, "Decatur Man Jailed for Robbing Store Worker." Decatur. Jarrett Jamal Wilson, a 22-year-old Decatur man who recently served a prison term in an attempted murder case, has been arrested for allegedly robbing a store worker. Wilson was taken into custody Friday in connection with the robbery, which occurred September 21st at Eastside Market, 1467 East William Street. The victim, 21, told police he was smoking marijuana with two males when one of them came up behind him and strangled him by placing his forearm across the victim's neck, applying pressure to his throat, said a sworn statement by a Decatur patrol officer. Officers found the victim with blood coming from his mouth, an affidavit by Officer Andrew Whitmer said. The store worker told police that while one of the males was strangling him, the other one, who he knew by the street name of Noon, took money from his pockets and the store cash register. The victim, who knew the suspect who strangled him as Jamal, located a picture of that suspect on a Facebook page. When the victim showed the photo to Whitmer, the officer recognized him as Wilson. He is being held in the Macon County Jail on $75,000 bond on a preliminary robbery charge. Wilson is due in court for his arraignment by Friday. The other suspect, Derek L. Brown, a 21-year-old parolee at the time of his arrest in October, was acquitted by a jury January 28th of a robbery charge. Wilson had pleaded guilty in 2013 to aggravated unlawful use of a weapon and obstructing justice in exchange for a 3-year prison sentence. Wilson was initially charged with attempted first-degree murder in that case, in which he and another teen male were involved in the shooting of a 16-year-old male in May 2012 on the 1200 block of West Green Street. The victim suffered a shoulder injury. Maxwell P. Brown, then 17, shot the victim while standing up in his chair, with his upper body poking through the sunroof. Brown is serving an 8-year sentence for aggravated battery with a firearm. The next article is entitled, Group Launches Decatur Corridor Off Efforts, Beautify Decatur Coalition. Decatur. The Beautify Decatur Coalition is looking to help businesses along 22nd Street and Pershing Road enhance the look of the corridors as the spring gets started. A meeting was held Monday at the Decatur Club to provide interested businesses with information about economic development incentives, beautification incentives, and the city limits community marketing effort. Spring is the time when everything starts to happen, said Jill Davis, co-chair of the Beautify Decatur Coalition. It doesn't have to take a lot of time, energy, or money. The group is looking to build off efforts started last year during a similar meeting at Debbie's Diner focusing on 22nd Street, Davis said. She said several businesses already have started work on planning for projects, including landscaping and adding sculptures. She said businesses are being encouraged to work together, which can help to get more done in many cases. They were encouraged during the meeting to brainstorm ideas about the corridors, Davis said. Patrick Holbin, the city's economic development officer, provided information about what incentives, such as the Enterprise Zone, are available to aid businesses. The coalition's efforts fit in what is trying to be accomplished through the City Limitless campaign that was launched in May, said Nicole Bateman, community marketing manager. Driving through the community, we want visitors to have a positive first impression, Bateman said. That's going to make a difference. Positive impressions can lead to a benefit for businesses, as customers become interested in the possibility of spending more money, Bateman said. Beautify Decatur organizes several ways businesses can become involved, such as participating in the No Litter Zone, Adopt a Street, and the Let's Keep Decatur Beautiful contest, Davis said. She said details of this year's contests are being worked out for a May 1st start. For more information, email Davis at jilldavis@beautifunddecaturbusiness.com. Or go to the Beautify Decatur Coalition page on Facebook. The next article is entitled, Illinois Fishing Tournament Registration Available Online. Springfield. Registration for fishing tournaments in Illinois has gone online. The Illinois Department of Natural Resources says it's now using an online application system for fishing clubs and tournaments organizers to apply for permits. The state agency says angling groups have applied for more than 2,100 tournament permits to date. The agency also is using its website to provide up-to-date tournament schedule. It's online at www.ifishillinois.org. Tournament organizers also will use on the website to register fish harvest data from tournaments. IDNR says that will help fisheries management efforts statewide. The website is available for anyone who is interested in tournament fishing in Illinois. The agency says fishermen can click on the map on the site to find a list of approved and pending tournaments for different bodies of water. The next article is entitled Performance-Based Funding Proposed for Higher Education. Springfield. While Governor Bruce Rauner is calling for a 20% cut in guaranteed state support for public university operations next year, his budget proposal would spend an additional $50 million on performance-based funding. That money, 5% of the $1.01 billion Rauner suggests spending on state universities, would be divvied out to schools competitively based on the number of degrees they award, the cost per degree, the amount of money spent on research and public service, and other measures designed to show how well they're doing the job of providing high-quality, affordable education to students of diverse backgrounds. Performance-based funding has been part of the mix in Illinois for several years, although to a much lesser extent. In fiscal years 2013 and 2014, it accounted for about $6.2 million of the $1.2 billion the state spent annually on four-year universities. No money was allocated for performance funding last year, and the state hasn't authorized any funding for higher education this year and amid its historic budget impasse. The administration says the performance funding concept is meant to encourage schools to focus on providing value for students who attend the state universities and the taxpayers who support them. We really see this as a carrot, not a stick, said Beth Purvis, Rauner's education secretary. The idea is increasingly popular across the country. 37 states have some form of performance-based funding for universities or community colleges, or are in the process of phasing it in, according to an update last summer from the National Conference of State Legislatures. But some researchers and higher education officials caution that the setup can produce unintended consequences, such as grade inflation and tightened admission standards. Southern Illinois University President Randy Dunn expressed those concerns last week to the Senate committee that oversees higher education funding. You don't want to have an institution where you start rationing out accessibility to students on the basis of gaming the formula, Dunn said, though he said that type of thinking is not in SIU's DNA. Our DNA is accessibility, he said. It is bringing in all students who we think have any ability to show college success, working with them in retention programs, advisement programs, first-generation student support. Dunn added, you don't want to have a performance funding model that causes an ISU to say, you know, we're not going to take those students anymore. A 2014 report from the Community College Research Center at Columbia University suggests that has taken place at public universities in some states that have shifted a greater percentage of funding to a performance-based model. The study, based on interviews with administrators at 9 universities in Indiana, Ohio, and Tennessee, said the most frequently cited unintended impacts of performance funding across our colleges was restricting the admission of less prepared students. Dunn, who supports the performance funding concept, said the level Rauner has proposed is probably about the right balance. Eastern Illinois University President David Glassman said he welcomes the idea of more funding based on performance. In his testimony before the Senate committee, Glassman noted that Eastern performs well on many of the measures used to determine funding. James Applegate, executive director of the Illinois Board of Higher Education, is a major proponent of performance-based funding. But the board's budget request for the fiscal year that begins July 1st calls for establishing a foundation level of funding, a little more than $1.2 billion, before targeting additional money toward performance funding. Applegate, who came to the board from the Lumina Foundation, an early backer of the concept, said the state needs to stabilize a system that provides nearly 110,000 jobs and $100 billion in direct economic activity. Once that's done, it will be important to strengthen a funding method that encourages universities to help more students from a wide range of backgrounds to earn degrees and do it affordably, he said. We need many more degrees, and we need them produced at less cost, and we need to target getting more low-income students of color and adults into college to get those degrees, Applegate said. State Senator Chapin Rose, Republican Mahomet, is a member of the Senate committee that oversees university funding and another longtime advocate for performance-based funding. While he supports the governor's push to make it a larger share of the state's higher education spending, Rose said, we've got to get out of the current emergency crisis we're in. With Chicago State University facing possible closure and Eastern and other schools in an increasing financial peril, Rose said he's focused on gaining a consensus on a plan to get money to schools for the current year. His preferred idea is one-time funding at reduced levels similar to those proposed by the governor, to a measure that would streamline the way the state buys goods and services. Legislation has been introduced, but hasn't advanced. The next article is entitled, Kids' Trauma Effects Explored, Decatur. Scottish author Ian McLaren wrote, be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a hard battle. Those words could have been the theme for a one-day conference held for school social workers at Richland Community College to recognize School Social Work Week. Anne Studzinski, Managing Director of the Illinois Childhood Trauma Coalition, and Peggy Mayfield, President-elect of the Association for Child and Adolescent Counseling, talked about childhood trauma. Kids who have hair-trigger tempers, difficulty paying attention, and violent reactions to frustration could have experienced trauma. That trauma can mean anything from a chaotic home life to abuse or an event such as a tornado or fire. To help the social workers picture how children feel, she chose one and pretended that person was a child being removed from her home to foster care. You wake up in the morning, the social worker comes and loads up clothes and belongings in a garbage bag and sends you off to school with the knowledge that she's going to pick you up after classes and take you to a stranger's home. I say, "Have a good day," Sudzinski said. "Do you really think you're going to have a good day?" To the child, everything familiar is gone, and her world has been rocked to its foundations. The four R's of helping traumatized kids: realize the widespread impact of drama. Recognize the signs that a child has experienced trauma. Respond rather than punish. Resist re-traumatization. The normal trauma response is fight, flight, or freeze, Mayfield said. The brain gets a jolt of stress hormones, and once the immediate danger is passed, the body returns to normal. But some kids live in a constant state of toxic stress due to living in dangerous neighborhoods and chaotic homes. Those kids' bodies never return to normal levels of stress hormone, and it can actually change brain structure and reduce the ability to control reactions. The response is launched on an ongoing basis, she said. This is the new and upcoming thing, to be able to look at kids from this trauma-focused lens and try to figure out how to help them as opposed to putting them out of school, said Rise Davis, behavioral specialist with Macon-Piatt Special Education District. A new law, which goes into effect in the fall, requires school districts to have suspensions and expulsions for only the most severe of infractions, which means that school staff will have to find other ways to handle disruptive kids. The next article is entitled, "Logan County Ballot Asks for Tax Levy for Veterans." Lincoln, Logan County voters will be asked to support a 0.03% tax levy for the new Veterans Assistance Commission. The primary election is March 15th, today. The commission will operate for veterans and is mandated by law, said Michelle Ramlow, post commander of Lincoln VFW 1756. "It's all about investing in veterans," she said. "We feel that most people will do what's best for veterans and hope that holds true in this election." And that's the end of part one of the Tuesday, March 15th, edition of the Decatur Herald and Review. I'll be right back with part two.